And after Jesus was born, that's what the text says from Matthew chapter 2. And after Jesus was born, is it too soon to read a text about after Jesus was born on December 26th? If you have a Bible, you can open it or you can be people of the screen this morning. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where's the one who's been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and we've come to worship him." What do we do after Jesus is born? It might be too soon to ask the question, right? Like, are your presents, do you do this in your family? You open them and then you put them all back under the tree after they're opened so you can look at them for a little while? Or have you put it all away already? Is it a little too soon? Because the food's not all eaten. You have leftovers still, right? Did you eat your tamales already? I didn't get mine yet, so I'm assuming you haven't eaten them all yet. Nito, I didn't get my tamales. I'm calling you out in front of everybody. But you got a lot of company. There's a lot of tamales around here. There's still tamales in the fridge. There's still turkey and tofu, right? Is it too soon to ask the question after Jesus is born? We haven't even said goodbye to all of our family. The grandparents from the other side didn't make it here yet. We didn't get to the Mission Inn to see the lights. Don't mess with this. It's only December 26th. If we have to talk about after Jesus, we're going to have to go back to school and mess it all up. After Jesus is born, the story says this morning, King Herod has visitors. The question comes to Herod. His family has been ruling for 150 years. This is a family that doesn't share power. They consume it and own it. There are five Herods in your New Testament story. This one is Herod the Great for a reason. It is under Herod the Great that so much happens for the region there. Herod the Great is the one that builds the huge temple complex. The top of that temple plaza, they tell us, is 5 football fields from north to south, 3 football fields from east to west. This is not like a flat plaza of football fields. That would be a glorious Super Bowl Sunday, wouldn't it? It's not that. It's not flat. It's built into the side of the rock and the mountain. Tremendous work. This temple complex contains that part that we still talk about today, the Wailing Wall. Under Herod the Great, the temple complex was built. Under Herod the Great, Caesarea Maritime, a new port city was developed. Think Newport Beach, Balboa Island. Did you go and check out the lights yet down there? No? You're so quiet. Did you just eat too much? You're just coma still, aren't you? Food coma still. Go down to Balboa Island, Newport Beach. Take, you know, the peninsula, the water and the inlet there. Imagine that. That's Caesarea Maritime. Could you imagine a soccer stadium on Balboa Island? Herod the Great could. He built that kind of a stadium with technology from Italy, they say. Certain kind of technology where they brought concrete underground, underwater, and it hardened while it was underwater. Fascinating new way of building and developing because Herod the Great was there. That port now develops and they have commerce and real citizens emerge for Rome who can produce and who can consume. Herod the Great takes them into their next stage. Because of Herod the Great, they have the temple complex, they have Caesarea Maritime. Because of Herod the Great, they have structure after structure after structure. It is Herod the Great who puts these things together. It's also Herod the Great who brings so much destruction and damage. Herod the Great will put you to death if you get in his way. Whether you're a priest or a peasant, whether you're a rabbi or a mother or children, Herod will put you to death if you get in his way. He's not a great family man either. He exiled one wife and child. He killed another. One historian says that Herod the Great makes Henry VIII look monogamous and merciful. This is Herod the Great. If we know nothing else about Herod, even from history, from these things I've mentioned, if we only know about Herod, what's in Matthew chapter 1 and 2, we would already know to look out. Herod is named in those visits from the angels, the visions that come to the Christmas story, three of the four visions, they name Herod the Great. Watch out, Mary is told. Watch out, Joseph, the Magi. They're all warned about Herod the Great. If we only knew from our Bible story, we would know. When we hear the name Herod, this could be trouble. After Jesus is born, the text says, what do we do after Jesus is born? King Herod is being asked now, what's he going to do after Jesus is born? Phenomenal question in the Jesus story, because Herod has all the power of the region. So he has more power than people living anywhere within his earshot. And here come three intelligent visitors from the neighboring nation, from the king of Persia. They come with a question. Herod, where has this happened? It happened right under your nose, the Bible says. Where is the one who's been born king of Jews? It's an unfortunate translation, king of the Jews. Should be king of Judea. Where's the one who's been born king of the region? Where's the one who calls the shots? Where's the one who knows what's going on around here? Where's the decider? We want to talk to that person, the Magi ask. Where's the king? Some people at Christmas time come to stories like this, and it interrupts sort of the beautiful, warm holiday we've been having. It interrupts the tamales and the tofu and the turkey. We come to stories like this in the Bible when we finally get down to a question about power and we resist. Many of us, we don't want our Bible to feel political. Do some of you agree? You came into the sanctuary this morning to sort of have shelter from all that's going on in the world. You came into the sanctuary this morning to sort of continue the vacation experience, and we open and we get this scripture that interrupts, sort of. I don't know what you did on Christmas Day at your house. See, we tend to prefer things like this. We have our nice meal, and then we watched the video that was trending for the day, the top trending video. Why not? My daughter said, have you seen this video about polar bears? I don't care about polar bears. I got to do the dishes, right? Like, what video about polar bears? Mom, it's the number one trending video. How could you not know? Okay, here's the polar bears. Here's the polar bears. These are from the San Diego Zoo. Did y'all hear this? 25 tons of snow imported to the San Diego Zoo. So the polar bears can do this. Look at how happy. (laughs) 25 tons of snow imported to a city that's about 75 degrees year-round, right? They say the polar bears need the snow. This rolling around and moving in the snow is part of, because it's part of their regular habitat, it gives them body movements, and they learn, their body learns about ways they survive in the wild. They're not going to be in the wild. They're going to be in the San Diego Zoo. But they got snow for Christmas. Isn't that sweet? You loved it, didn't you? You went, aw. And we're stuck with Herod and Jesus. What do we do the day after Christmas? Well, we like to watch polar bear videos. Thanks. Herod's got visitors who ask him, where's the one who's in charge of the region? And we would catch the irony and the parody in the scene here. Who's supposed to have all the power in the region? Herod. And three visitors come and ask him, do you even know what's going on in your own territory? There's supposedly one who's been born, and we came to worship this one. The text goes on in verse 3, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him. When he called together then all of the people's chief priests, all the teachers and the lawyers, you wouldn't think he would need all of them. A couple of top advisors ought to be enough. The text says he calls them all together. and they caucus together, and he asks them, what do you know about this? Where's this Christ to be born? And they answer the text we studied last week. Many of you were here when we studied the prophet Micah, who said, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, by no means you are the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people. What do you do after Jesus is born? If you're King Herod, you're deeply disturbed. The text says he's anxious. There's commotion internally. That's what the word means. He's deeply disturbed and distressed. If there's one in the region that has all this power, then maybe Herod doesn't. He's distressed. He calls the people together. Verse 7, then he calls the Magi secretly. He found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. How traumatic would that be if you're supposed to know everything that's happened in your territory and you have to ask the guests, by the way, when did this happen? Where did you see that star? Could we plot it now so we know how old is this baby already? When will this be a real threat? When do I have to worry? King Herod is working on this. When's the exact time the star appeared? Verse 8, he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report it to me so that I may go and worship him too. Yeah, that's what Herods do. They worship babies. One theologian, Stanley Hauerwas, says, we come to stories like this in our scripture, and one of the greatest enemies of understanding the gospel at Christmas time is sentimentality. Sentimentality, he says, the tender, nostalgic, good feelings we have at the holidays, like watching polar bears roll through snow. Which one of us hasn't gloated, the theologian wonders, which one of us hasn't gloated over our children or our grandchildren dressed up in the nativity scene, being Joseph, Mary, or the shepherds or the wise men, and listening to them squeak out the little tunes around the manger? Tenderness, he says, and nostalgia over the Christmas story, which is how we end up with snowmen and snowy, glistening scenes and elves creeping into our nativity. Tenderness and nostalgia, he says, become intertwined. We want a feel-good night when Jesus is born. And I'm telling you today, the night Jesus is born and the day after when Herod has his advisors from the east, the air is not light, it is heavy. It's a heavy story now as Herod hears the answers, because indeed, if Jesus is king, Herod is not. Friends, if you came in here this morning wondering about the powers that are pulling at your life, if Jesus is king, no other power in this earth matters. It cannot pull us away from this reality. It disturbs Herod. If Jesus is king, I'm not. Herod now sends out the decree, and Mary and Joseph and the baby, the refugee family, are now on the run. Where do they go? To Egypt, the land of plagues, as we mentioned last Sabbath. There's a heaviness the day after. What do you do on December 26th after Jesus is born? Well, the reality sets in, friends. There's a heaviness in the story today. When I was going through the drive-thru to get a warm drink a few weeks ago, what do we call it? A comfort beverage, right, Jory? A warm comfort beverage. The guy serving me my drinks started with these lines about, isn't this a wonderful time of year? How's your holiday? Don't you love the meal? All the stuff. And I got grumbly with him because we pastors sometimes get grumbly this time of year. And he just kept going, but don't you love it? And I said to him, but are you feeding anybody in your house? Like, are you grocery shopping? Are you doing the laundry? Are you changing the sheets in the spare bedroom? Like, are you paying for anything? That stuff came out of my mouth. You don't have to be pastoral all the time. Sometimes you can just say it. And then this young adult looked at me and went, I do dishes? Yeah, that's a good start. He said, but don't you love it all? Actually, there's a heaviness in the air for many of us around the holidays, right? There's a heaviness in the air often. There's a heaviness now in the story when King Herod appears and the wise men tell him, if Jesus has all the power, you do not, King Herod. You do not in this story. So we interrupt this most wonderful time of the year with this reality check. What do we do the day after Jesus is born? Pastor Vaughn said on Christmas Eve here, it's not that Christmas happened, it's that Christmas happens. This is what we do the day after Jesus is born. It's what we want Cameron and Adam to know, that because Jesus is born and all the power of the universe is consolidated there, that all of their lives are going to be reordered. Everything about your life is different, Adam, because Jesus is born that night. Everything about our realities are reordered. So it is, the power will not look like Herod any longer. It'll look like Jesus from the manger. After the Magi visited, the story goes on to say that they went on their way, verse 9. The star, they had seen it in the east. It went ahead of them until it stopped over a place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. And then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense. This is the one brief scene in all of Matthew chapter 1 and 2 where things are calm. It also happens to be the scene where there is no Herod. Herod's completely absent for this one moment where things are calm and quiet. And it is strange that visitors from another country want to bow and worship a deity who does not belong to them, that they owe nothing to this Jesus in a manger. Isn't it something that the God of the universe can receive worship from any of us all the time? This is the gospel in just a few sentences, that God came close in Jesus so that whoever is present receives. We sing Silent Night, like we said last week, not because everything's calm in the kingdom, but because we know God is on duty this night in the stable. It's not that Christmas happened, it's that Christmas happens. This is what we do after Jesus is born. We begin to make room in our homes and in our relationships and in our lives. We make room for Christmas to happen again and again and again. We make room for more peace and more wholeness. We make room for the reality that looks like Jesus, not Herod. There's a congregation in London in the Piccadilly neighborhood that's had my attention for the last 2 weeks. Piccadilly Square, many of you have traveled that part of the world, you know that stop, at least on the tubes, you can get out. One of the churches you can stand in front of is the St. James Church. Church built in the 15th, 16th century, beautiful. Inside of their sanctuary. About 3 weeks ago, the congregation arrived for one of their Christmas evening services, an evensong, and there was a quiet, terrible image floating above them inside of their church. Floating inside of them, when they looked up, there was an object hanging in what we call the nave of the church that they could not imagine. It's a frail rubber dinghy. This dinghy was rescued off of the coast in Greece by an artist, Arabella Dorman. She knew that many of the refugees, she'd done a lot of work in Iraq and Iran and Turkey and Syria. She knew many of the refugees were doing some of their crossings in this area. So she flew there earlier, just a few weeks ago, and found this dinghy on the shores. They decided at the St. James Parish to suspend it over the top of their cathedral inside during their church inside of Advent. Suspended from that little dinghy, you can see life vests. Two are adult-sized. One is child-sized. Child-sized one has fallen a little farther away, just out of the reach of the adult-sized life jackets. And as the worshipers came that first night to celebrate their Christmas evening lessons of carols, this ominous life raft hung over their head. But that wasn't all. Up down in front, they have a nativity set. Around the nativity scene, they've put more life vests. Vests of all sizes are collected there. This is a dinghy, by the way, that's constructed for 15 people. And the night it was used to cross the sea, 65 people were crammed into this little vessel. So when she found that dinghy on the shoreline in Greece, she found it so overwhelming, she searched for, of all things, not an art gallery, but a church that would allow this to be suspended over their worship. It's been a little, the critique has been interesting coming from the families, especially the nativity scene down front. When one family entered, the children ran forward to sit where Mary and Joseph were, and the mother realized what this display was all about, and she called her children back. No, 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 this is too much. This is too much cruelty. I don't want my children exposed to this. But another worshiper said, there is no way you can sit underneath this dinghy and say your prayers and sing your Advent songs. What did we sing all month long? O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel. No way you can sit and sing this song underneath this dinghy and not, one worshiper said, and not say a larger prayer. There's no way we can come into this space and not be interrupted. Sentimentality has no place in the Bethlehem story for this parish at St. James at Piccadilly. The critique has been kind of cruel as well. It got me wondering and imagining, what if we suspended from our sanctuary symbols of cruelty? What would it look like? What symbols of cruelty would suspend here, in addition to something that reminds us of trauma happening not just in one region of the world, but in a lot of places? What other symbols would we suspend and hang, friends? What belongs with this list? When you go down to the Mission Inn tonight, if you go tomorrow night, count the number of people sleeping outside on the streets of Riverside. They're all bundled up, curled up around the outer streets while the rest of us are drinking our hot chocolate and wandering through. Or maybe we would suspend the families that we served the last 3 weeks. 250 boxes of groceries went out 3 weeks ago. Remember, some of you took them. Christmas Connection. We got one card back in the mail this week, a thank you card, where the gentleman wrote to thank this church for providing these large boxes of food for his family. Thank you because you made Christmas happen. Maybe we would suspend boxes of food to remind us. Maybe we would suspend fractured relationships, cruel relationships. Maybe we would suspend what? What would you suspend from the sanctuary? The power of the nativity story is the power that wants to grab all of this pain and cruelty and pull it close. Isn't it interesting when you look up at the ceiling of our church? Do you notice that it looks like a boat turned upside down? That's no coincidence. It's why it's called a nave. The Latin, the original word meaning is boat. While the band plays this morning and we reflect, I'm asking you that question. Get your phones out. You'll see two numbers on the screen. Text in. What would you suspend? What image of cruelty or suffering or pain would you suspend the day after Jesus is born? We'll listen to the band sing and we'll read some of your responses. Just text to one of these phone numbers.
And all our fears met within your sight, holy night, hallelujah. hands of divine. Holy night, oh light, mending fractured earth, a soul now felt it worth. Holy
some of your responses, Pastor Vaughn and myself. This church family is why we love you so much. Wait till you hear some of these. One person says, I would like to see the Constitution of the United States suspended in a church because it's Christians who can afford, because we have all the power in the world. We have all the power on this earth. I'd like to see a hypodermic needle or suitcases, crosses, a cast representing a broken, hurting body. I'd like to see bigotry suspended.
Someone says they could imagine the torn and dirty clothes of homeless people suspended. Another is the dollar signs suspended to denote the increasing gap between those who have and those who do not.
Symbols of hunger, especially in relating to the children of our community, the Riverside Unified School District. It serves almost 65% of our K-12 students that get subsidized meals. Weekends and holidays, that means no food for those children.
And also symbols of immigrant children hanging above us.
An image of a mentally ill person or a drug addict in recovery. I would hang masks, another one says, masks, for the masks that we put on ourselves when we come to worship.
I could see a church building suspended from our church building ceiling.
Hmm.
Our capacity and God-given influence can sometimes do just as much damage as good.
A hospital bed, torn and dirty clothes of the homeless. I would suspend envy, hate, and jealousy.
And one more that I have, someone sent three images. Each one is of very large fences.
Fences. I would suspend anger, broken families, broken relationships, bruised faces of Muslim kids beaten for their religious beliefs. I would suspend a Bible. More than one person said that. I would suspend spiritual slothfulness. Oil-torn, tattered clothes, various figures of hopelessness I would suspend. Something from the Holocaust, hospital gowns, guns. Several of you said, I would suspend guns. You also said I would suspend ugly hate. The power of the story Herod is confronting that night in the stable, the power of the story means Herod has to reorganize everything about his life. What do we do the day after Christmas? We invite you all, along with the pastors, this is what we're doing, reorganizing our lives again. This is what we all do the day after Christmas, so that Christmas didn't happen, it happens today.